Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week we explore a different aspect of the unknown, including news updates and exciting new guests. Tonight, our guest is ghost researcher Richard Sennett, longtime ghost researcher, and by the way, one of the leading in the world, in my opinion. But before we get to our guests, let me give you just a little bit of UFO news, because we do have some interesting stuff going on. One thing that's surfing around the internet, which is pretty interesting, is this idea on how to lower the rising gas prices. And I don't know if this will work, but this idea is all over the internet. And it was originally sent by a retired Coca-Cola executive. And here is basically the idea. For the rest of this year, do not purchase any gasoline from the two biggest gas companies, which are now actually one, ExxonMobil and Texaco. And the idea is, if they are not selling any gas, they will be inclined to reduce their prices. Now, I don't know if this will work, but I've gotten several emails about this, and it's an interesting idea, so maybe you could kick that around a little bit. Another piece of news is about alternative health. And this guy, Dr. John Christopher, is making big waves in the alternative healing community with his claims that cayenne pepper can actually heal a large number of diseases. He's actually known as Dr. Cayenne in the healing community. And at age 35, he was told by his doctor that he was going to die of high blood pressure and arterial sclerosis. His doctor gave him 8 years to live, and he also had stomach ulcers, and no insurance company would even insure him. And he heard that cayenne pepper, a teaspoon of cayenne pepper mixed in a glass of hot water every day, would have beneficial effects on his health. And so he did this, and he says that within 2 months his ulcers were gone, and his health improved immediately. And at age 45, 10 years later, he was, of course, still alive, and he went to the doctor, and they discovered that his blood pressure was perfectly normal, and his venous structure, the doctor told him, was that of a teenage boy. So he started researching it, and according to his research and his practice, the use of cayenne pepper can actually cure heart disease, heart arrhythmia, it can lower blood pressure, reverse hemorrhoids, heal ulcers, heal varicose veins, tonsillitis, it can reverse allergies, tendinitis, sinusitis, can actually stop heart attacks if administered immediately, and a whole list of stuff like this. And he's not the only one who's actually saying this. There's another doctor, Dr. Schultz, who's also making similar claims. And it turns out that there are several cultures throughout the world who use cayenne pepper as a kind of cure-all. So I'm not a doctor, and I'm certainly not recommending that anyone go and start downing cayenne pepper, but it's something you might want to look into if you're into alternative healing. Okay, now what else do we got going on? Ah, yes, a little bit of UFO news. I just recently got a very interesting report of a sighting which occurred about, 3 days ago, over Canada, in New Brunswick, Canada. A young lady saw something hovering, a strange object, she says, hovering over her home, and she quickly got her son's telescope and looked through it at this object. And what she saw was really bizarre. She said it was round, it was black, and covered with lights around the edges, and it seemed to have little lights all coming out of it that were descending to the ground. She said the material was what really freaked her out. It was this strange black material that had no reflection. And this is, of course, a red flag among UFO researchers who know that reports of metal that doesn't reflect is very common in UFO reports. And she watched this for like 15 minutes before it actually went away. And she's convinced it was an actual UFO. And there was also another recent sighting over Lake Superior by some Canadian Coast Guard officials. This was last week or 2 weeks ago, I believe. I don't have the exact date. But it's a very interesting sighting because it was involved numerous officials on this ship, and they actually turned off the shipboard lights to make sure it wasn't a reflection, and they claim they saw several very bright lighted objects actually come out of the water in Lake Superior and go straight up and disappear. So lots of stuff going on. And let me see what else. A last bit of news is kind of sad. Leo Dworshak is a gentleman who actually wrote this book called UFOs Are With Us, Take My Word. And his story is amazing. He tells the story that in 1932, as a 12-year-old child, he and his 8-year-old brother were in North Dakota outside their home hiking through the fields when they came upon a flying saucer. And they not only saw this saucer once or twice, they saw it dozens of times as it was landed in a field. And figures would get out of this saucer and sort of study the field and work with the vegetation and things like this. And they got closer and closer each time until finally they were actually able to approach these aliens, if that's what they were, and talk to them. And it's an incredible story. I highly recommend the book. It's called UFOs Are With Us, Take My Word. And these aliens actually gave a bunch of predictions which came true, including the civil rights riot and nuclear proliferation. This was back in 1932, mind you. So it's a very, very interesting story. The sad part is Leo Dworshak has just passed away 2 weeks ago, so we'll send him our blessings and hope that he's in a better place. But okay, now to our guest. I am so excited, I can't tell you, because I have been researching ghosts myself for, 20 years now, and Richard Sennett has always been a huge name in the field. Richard Sennett is actually one of the leading ghost researchers and has written several books about this subject, including Ghost Stalker's Guide to California and several others. And he actually began researching ghosts, I believe, as a result of his own ghost encounter. So, Richard, thank you very much for coming onto the show.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
Oh, I'm so excited. I mean, I can't tell you. I believe you had a huge effect in this field. I mean, your name comes up in all the books, and I know you've done all sorts of radio shows and TV shows, so I'm really honored that you came onto my little show. But it's so...
I'm glad to be here, and glad to kind of help out with anyone who's interested in studying the paranormal.
So you've been doing this for a long time then?
Yeah, since about 1978, actually, when I actually did see a ghost myself, and it was such a remarkable, unexpected, wild thing that I wanted to find out more. I wanted to get some answers, and I'm still searching.
Okay, so tell us about that. 1978, huh? How old were you?
Well, I was in my 20s, late 20s, but I was doing an archaeological dig, and this was at Mission San Antonio de Padua, one of the old California missions founded by Father Serra. And we were staying there at the monastery, which is still a monastery, and doing this excavation during the day. Well, I got involved in taking on a special project, so I was working late, and I left the laboratory and walked through the courtyard with the every intention of going into the kitchen to look into some barbecued chicken wings in the refrigerator, and I saw what appeared to be a monk, and I believed it was one of the brothers who was up late. So I got closer, and all of a sudden it vanished. Abruptly, it wasn't there anymore, and this was so unexpected and so shocking and so amazing that from that point on, I started to question what are ghosts, why are they here, where do they come from, where do they go, and I still don't have all the answers, but I've got a few theories, and I've managed to go all over the world and meet some of the great people involved in this great study.
Now, when you saw this ghost, did it look solid, like
yes.
A normal person?
It didn't look anything like movies. It wasn't transparent, wasn't glowing, wasn't doing anything like that. It looked like a guy wearing a monk's habit. In fact, I can remember the folds that it made as it moved. You know, it looked real.
Wow.
In fact, over the years of my studies, I have seen a few other ghosts. Not a whole lot. I don't see them everywhere. But all of them, bar none, have looked like real people. They haven't looked like Hollywood's idea of what a ghost should be.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So, did you believe in ghosts at the time when you saw that?
Oh, I believe I saw something. That's a big question people ask. Do you believe in ghosts? No, what I believe in is there's a phenomenon which we do not as yet understand. I believe that is what it is. But what it is, that's the big rub, you know. And I'm not ready to say I have an answer, but I can guarantee you it's a lot more complicated than people think. I mean, it's not spirits of the dead coming back to haunt the earth or anything like that. It's it may have several explanations, not just one. There,
right.
It could
I know exactly, like, the time, sort of time looping back into the present moment, or sort of an echo of a replay, a residual haunting?
Yeah, I think that's part of a lot of it. There's a lot of terminology. After image is one, or as you say, an echo, or a time warp, or a time hole. That accounts for, I think, a lot of ghost sightings. But a few, not a majority, maybe only 20%, do appear to be much like folklore. I mean, they're dead loved ones who come back to give you a message. You know, someone you recognize, a husband, father, mother, daughter, son, what have you, come back to give you some kind of a message. And universally, the message is a very positive one, not a negative one at all.
Well, that's good. Well, can you tell us if a real ghost, then, if it, like, reacts to you, or if it's looking at you, or sort of interacting? Is that
safe? But those are very rare. Most ghosts don't even seem to care about if you're there or not. You just sort of stumbled into something. And there's, as I say, so much we don't know about this phenomenon. We don't know, as I say, where it comes from or what it might be. And there are many accounts of ghosts that appear baffling, such as ghosts of people who aren't dead yet.
Right.
Now, how do you explain that?
Their astral body?
Yeah, another weird one is ghosts of people who are recognized, but who never lived, like characters out of fiction. Encountering Sherlock Holmes, for instance, or The Shadow, or some of these other figures from literature. What in the world is that about? And then, of course, you've got ghosts that appear to be like just lights or fog or monsters or a whole bunch of things. Animals come back as ghosts. Okay, animals are alive, especially pets. You have an affinity with them. But what about ghost houses or cars or ships or airplanes or trains?
Or trees, even.
Or trees. Okay, all kinds of different stories about these strange, bizarre things which shouldn't exist but somehow do.
Well, that's interesting because you always think of ghosts as being living, but now that you mention it, of course, there's all these stories of ghost cars, and of course, people are wearing their ghostly clothes as well, so that's peculiar.
Yeah, and you know, how does that happen? You know, how? I mean, obviously, if you think they're just spirits, they should just have a spiritual or naked body. But
right.
For some reason, they come back fully clothed, and many times the clothes are very important as they seem to give a clue as to who they are, how they're dressed, what they're wearing. In fact, the bizarre thing about seeing a ghost is many of the people comment how much detail they see. Now, a ghost sighting is only a matter of seconds, as a rule. You know, by the time it takes you to count to 10, that's the average ghost sighting. But you'll see details, like, as I say, the folds on the garment of the monks, or a brooch or a ring or some emblem or a hat, so as to give you something to identify them, the ghost or whoever it is. Now, what in the world is that going on? Obviously, that has something to do with how we perceive these ghosts. They're not with our eyes, obviously. They're with something in our minds.
Right. So this explains the stories of how nearsighted people see ghosts clearly.
Yeah.
And stuff like that.
are people that have hallucinated and seen ghosts, for instance, which of course is described, you know, as a hallucination. But what is it? It's some, in other words, somehow ghosts are affecting our minds as opposed to just something we're seeing in the real world, which might account for why one person can be in a room and see a ghost, and the person standing next door to them sees nothing.
Right. Very interesting. Well, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight is leading ghost researcher Richard Sennett. If you want to give us a call, if you have any questions, there's a toll-free number, 877-876-5227. Okay, Richard, now, after you saw this ghost, what was your next step? I mean, you got interested in it, and how did you start investigating? How did you go from being a ghost witness to a leading ghost researcher?
Well, first I tried to read everything I could about the subject. I guess I read over 100 books. I talked to people who had seen ghosts, from spiritualist ministers to actual ghost researchers. Now, you got to remember, this is the 70s. There's no internet. There aren't a lot of books on the subject. And I took a lot of heat. You know, a lot of people said, you're nuts, you're crazy, and dismissed me at that point. And then I really didn't know how to conduct an investigation. There weren't books out there on this subject. So, you know what I used was archaeology. So I approached the subject the way an archaeologist approaches a dig. So, and by the way, it worked pretty good. you collect data, you interview people, which is what you do on a dig site. You get the witnesses, see what they remember. You go through the historical documents, which I knew how to do, and you conduct experiments. And I, little by little, developed a plan or a way to, a template, you might call it, to investigate haunted sites. And I was inundated. People wanted me to come to their houses. They wanted me to investigate. Now, I never charge money for this. Still don't. It's not ethical in my way of thinking. And I try to keep accurate records as much as I can. And I try to investigate. Now I use teams of people as opposed to just myself, but the goal is to collect as much data and answer the primary questions, which are, is it really haunted? Is the site really haunted, or is it, can it be explained in any natural way? And then if it is haunted, who is haunting it and why?
Right. Well, tell us about some of your early cases.
Some of my early cases, I go back over them once in a while just for a laugh because I didn't really know what I was doing. And fortunately, I didn't get into too much trouble. But as I now know, there's a lot of bad things out there. So it's not all ghosts are Casper the Friendly Ghost. But fortunately, I never bumped into anything like that when I was first starting out. One house I investigated was a huge mansion built by a wealthy millionaire. He was a glass magnate, had developed a way to blow glass and do bottles with a machine, and got very rich over it. I had a bunch of houses, and he built this one, which was up for sale. This lady had bought the mansion in hopes of turning it into a home for disturbed teenagers. Well, as soon as she moved in, they started to hear voices and chanting, all kinds of stuff. So I brought a team there and did the work and found out that the mansion was built on a shrine site that had been used by the Native American people.
Wow.
Now, most people always think about Indian burial grounds, right?
Right.
Well, Indian burial grounds are sacred. But more sacred than the burial grounds are dance areas, because the Native Americans worship their gods by dancing. To them, that's kind of like, where are we kneeling in prayer in a church or a cathedral? Well, they had these areas, and they were very, very sacred and blessed. They usually marked them with, this particular tribe, with boulders. So there was this big circle with boulders, and you weren't supposed to go inside the circle unless you were suitably prepared and ready to perform a ritual dance.
Right.
Well,
right.
This fellow bought the land because it was in this beautiful little valley. I got all of the boulders collected and used them to build a fireplace out of.
Oh,
and,
no.
Of course, right after he moved in, all kinds of bad things started to happen. In fact, he only lived in the mansion 1 month and moved out and never came back.
Where was this?
This was a little town called Ojai in California, north of Los Angeles. It's famous now for a lot of movie stars. Well, anyway, they started to hear this chanting, which I was able to ascertain was part of the Indian rituals. So we got there, and we all of a sudden felt this ice-cold chill. Now, everyone in the group, I guess it was about 20 of us, felt it. It was just all of a sudden the temperature got 20 degrees colder. And I had a psychic lady who kind of got very big-eyed. She looked like an owl. It's hard to say. There's a ghost woman over there pointing into the darkness, and I saw nothing. And then she said, she's going down the hall, and went after it. Of course, I was right behind the psychic. And about 9 of the team came behind me. And the corridor ended in a huge ballroom. Now, this whole house is unfurnished and had been pretty well kind of left that way for a number of years. So we get to the door to this giant room with a huge chandelier and this massive fireplace. It was like 2 stories tall inside the room. And the psychic turns and said, the ghost is in there. You go first. And I'm
You're
scared
kidding.
To death. But what am I going to say, right? So I got my flashlight because it's dark, and I walk in there, and the hair is tingling on the back of my neck. My flashlight's going this way, that way, and every way. I don't see anything. And little by little, the rest of the people come in, and then off to my right, I see a woman dressed in the style of the turn of the century. A big leg of mutton sleeves. No, this is not a Native American. This is definitely a well-dressed, fashionable woman of the early part of the century. She's
wow.
walking down this hallway, and then she stops and looks back at us. And we're all looking at this woman, and this one guy's pounding me saying, oh, my God, do you see it, do you see it? And I said, just watch, don't move, just watch. And little by little, I guess, it seemed like about 5 minutes, but it was no more than a minute and a half. She just became blue, then transparent, and then she just slowly faded away.
Wow.
And as soon as she was gone, I raced down that hallway to make sure there were no mirrors or projectors or anything like that. There was nothing. Then I broke the team up. I had them draw pictures of what they saw and describe, you know, what exactly happened. In fact, I even separated them. One guy was trying to talk about it. I said, well, don't talk about it. Write it down. Write it down. And I was amazed that the pictures all matched. So they had seen the same thing. And we later learned that the man who built the mansion, he had a very bad relationship with his wife, and they had separate bedrooms. And his wife had put up with his abuse and would go to her bedroom. So it was reenacting one of those terrible encounters long before. Well, the lady never did buy the mansion, and it was never made into a home for disturbed children, which is good. And that was one of my first cases that I had. It was quite bizarre.
That's like jumping right into the deep end there. Wow.
Yeah.
So would you say that theaters and are one of the more haunted types of places?
Oh, yeah, I guarantee you that. In fact, that dates back to the days of Shakespeare. You know, the theaters are haunted. Why? I don't know. In fact, I've even gotten accounts from archaeologist friends of mine who've been in Greece and Rome and have gone to ancient Roman theaters and found them haunted. You know, they turn around and there's someone dressed as an ancient Roman among the ruins. So
wow.
The idea that theaters are haunted may go way beyond into the ancient world. In fact, I can challenge you. find me a theater that's of any age that isn't haunted.
So there's lots of haunted ones around here in Southern California?
Throughout the nation and throughout the world.
Wow.
And a lot of them from high schools to colleges to legitimate theaters, they've all got stories. So you go down to Hollywood, there's just scads of them. And that, by the way, includes some of the old movie palaces as well.
Wow. So, can ghosts hurt people? I mean, can they, in your opinion, can...
I do not believe so. Now, I used to say categorically, no, they can't hurt you. They have about as much consistency as a puff of smoke. They can frighten you. But I have gotten recently, especially, some accounts of people who've been sickened. Others have become depressed to a point where they commit suicide or attempt suicide. So I tend to think that I'll have to modify that and say on rare occasions they can injure the living. I know my friend Kerry Gaynor did a number of investigations where ghosts have scratched people.
That's right. I've seen some
evidence of that. I have also investigated cases where women especially have been sexually attacked by ghosts. And I always thought that was psychological. Obviously, the lady's nuts, right? But no, actually doing the investigation, I came away convinced this woman was really having a problem with this entity or whatever it was.
Right. Well, I talked to a couple of people who said they were pushed, and one was almost pushed down the stairs.
Yes, I've heard of that as well, or tripped. They swear they felt something tripped them, and they went down the stairs, but there was nothing there. I recently was at the old Horton Grand Hotel in San Diego, which is an old Victorian place built in the 1880s. And while I was investigating the staircase, which where a lot of people have seen a number of figures of women and men, most persistently a man dressed as a Westerner, you know, with a cowboy hat and all that. And I went down the stairs. I went down and injured my hand and everything else. It was almost as if something was there and I stumbled into it, you know, like bumping into a dog or something.
Wow. So hotels are also like one of the most haunted places.
Oh,
like.
Yes. In fact, any hotel of any age or history is probably haunted.
Wow.
Now, they're not going to tell you that when you check in. But
some will,
they use it as a kind of a marketing ploy. I know the Horton Grand has room number 309 or 310 that's believed haunted. But there are many rooms in there that are haunted, not just the one. I always tell people, if you go to a historic hotel, look at the ceiling. And if the ceiling has been wallpapered, check out. That's because many times men take their own lives by putting a gun in their mouths, pointing it up into their brain, and pulling the trigger. And the bullet, of course, keeps going, scattering blood, gore, and goo all over the walls, especially the ceiling. And rather than clean it, they just wallpaper it over.
Oh, how horrifying.
Well, many people do, sadly enough, take their own lives in hotel rooms. And yes, there are murders, a lot of drug deals, and gangsters are affiliated with hotels. Long ago, in less enlightened times, hotels were used for abortions, back when it was illegal. In those old days, I didn't go to the back alleys or anything like that. They went into a hotel room, and a woman would meet with a doctor. By the way, most of the people who did it were respected doctors who did this on the side. The only problem was, you know, they weren't some drunken hack. Was if there was any problems, there was no backup. So if anything bad happened during the abortion, the poor patient would die. And the doctor would just leave the poor woman in the hotel room and sneak out the back door. and leaving her to be discovered by the cleaning crew the next day. And but this happens a lot. It's strange that more people don't realize the transient nature of hotels and realize that there's so much that goes on in them which is negative.
Right, right. Well, it makes sense. You're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and tonight our guest is ghost researcher Richard Sennett. If you want to give us a call, the number is 877-876-5227. Now, Richard, you've written a bunch of books. Do you want to give people some of these titles and a way they can get a hold of some of these books?
Well, I've written quite a number of different books over the years, starting with Ghosts of the Haunted Coast, which is by Pathfinder Publishing. And they're out of Tucson, but you can get them on Amazon.com, and it's still in print. And I've written a number of books for small publishers after that. I've got a number from a little publisher in Ventura called Del Sol Publishing. You can get that on the net. Or again, get that through Amazon.com. Or they can check on my website, which is www.ghost-stalker.com. And they can, of course, email me, and I'll tell them where they can get the book or shoot them to the Phantom Bookshop, which is my online distributor for many of my books.
Okay, so your website is www.ghost-stalker.com. Okay. All right. And how many books have you written?
15. Well, actually, that's not true. I have written about 58, but I've only had published 15.
Well, actually, I know exactly what you're talking about. You know.
Yeah, I've tried to. In fact, I've got some messages into a couple of other publishing houses in hope that they might be interested in publishing some of my yet-to-be-published works.
So which is your favorite book or your best-selling book so far?
Well, The Ghost of the Haunted Coast, which was my first book, has made lots and lots of money for my publisher, and that was a good book. But the one I like best is the Hollywood books called Hollywood Ghosts, The Fabulous Phantoms of Filmdom.
Ah, tell us about that. That sounds interesting.
Well, my family was involved in movie making since the 20s, since the days of silent film, and they were worked at MGM. In fact, I still have cousins who work at Universal and for many of the studios, Columbia, stuff like that. So my first stories I got from Hollywood were right from my own family, and even my my mother's sister claims to have met the ghost of Rudolph Valentino.
Oh, wow.
So I got those stories originally. Well, actually, it's the publisher. He kept telling me, I want a book about Hollywood because it'll sell and make me money, and I'll be richer than I am already.
Right.
And I didn't want to do it. I said, heck, everybody's written a Hollywood book. You know, I don't know. I don't want to do it. I want to go someplace new and different and do different things. But
sure.
He said, no, I want Hollywood. Finally, I reluctantly did it. And I decided I'd write a new kind of Hollywood book, not anything like what others have done. They're all original stories. I went and investigated them personally. They aren't cut out of old books. Or too many of these writers who write ghost books just go to the library and rip off other people's stories and republish them or rewrite them a bit and call it their own. I decided I'd do something different. So these are places I personally have gone and people I've actually talked to, both at the studios, mansions of various stars, and places and stories from my family, as I say. The things I've personally done. It's called Hollywood Ghosts. I think it's my best book so far because I used a kind of a punchy style, very gonzo. I became very much part of the story, and I brought, at least that was my goal anyway, it was to bring the reader with me as I went into these old places, be they theaters or mansions or homes or sites of films. So it was a lot of fun. It took me about 2 years to write it. But when I was done, I was kind of glad that I was coerced into actually writing something.
Right. Well, so as you're doing all these cases, do you ever experience stuff that scares the pants off of you and everyone goes running away? Or, I mean, at this point...
Yes, you're dealing with the unknown. If you're not scared, you're an idiot, because we don't know what's out there, and there's some bad stuff. I have seen things that would make your hair stand on end. There's times when I have just been amazed, shocked, and actually compelled to run, because there's things out there that are bad. It's not all good. So I do get scared from time to time, not as often as I should maybe, but I've had some things happen. I've seen things move, doors open and close by themselves. I've seen apparitions appear. I've seen equipment be malfunctioned. I've seen things broken and smashed. I've seen psychics turn into jello. I've seen people go into trances which they couldn't come out of. I've seen some pretty amazing things over the years.
Yeah, well, you're right there on the front lines doing this stuff, so I'm really glad we have people like you doing this. Well, okay, here's a question. Now, can ghosts possess people? Because there's certainly a lot of written about that, and it's very controversial.
Yes, it is. I think that there are people who are very, very sensitive, and the sensitive people are more common than one might think. And I think if they're in the right mood, they can open themselves up to it. And this is, by the way, always, always dangerous. Never a good thing to do. But I do think in some cases that does happen.
Right. Well, that would be like similar to like uncontrolled mediumship, right?
Very much. I think there's a lot of what I call unconscious mediums out there. And I think that many people react and do things which they ordinarily would not do because of the influence of the paranormal. And I think this, by the way, affects a lot of people who do drugs and who are alcoholics.
Right, and these are the people that become ghosts anyway, right? So
yeah, and they come back, and they want to relive the high, the experience, and so they can influence and possess, if you will, want to use that term, others who are of a similar bend.
Well, how can people see a ghost? If they want to like go out there and see a ghost, where should they go, and how should they go about it?
Well, that's the hardest part, because you have to be in the right place, in the right frame of mind, to actually have that experience. And it'll happen when you least expect it. So what would I say? If you're in Southern California, which I happen to know very well, but there are a number of places besides that, but here in Southern California, I would say go to the Queen Mary in Long Beach.
Right, I've been there.
Check into a cabin. Make sure it's an old cabin. I would prefer M-Deck. Stay there several days. Not on the ghost tour. Don't bother with that. Don't go on a weekend either when there's lots of people. But go there in the middle of the week. Stay a couple of days. And then walk the decks between the hours of 4 a.m. Or 2 a.m. and 4 a.m. A two-hour period. Walk, and I can almost guarantee you that you'll have something happen.
Wow.
Those hours, ghosts appear almost normal. You encounter one, and it's like, oh, there's a ghost, and it's like you're in their place rather than they in yours.
Why is that? Why are they always coming out in the middle of the night like that?
Because things are calmer, more relaxed. See, we don't have distractions. During the daytime, they come out too, but we don't see them because we're so involved in what we're doing. It's light. Things are going, are happening. So late at night, that's when things are more subtle. You're more open to it. Also, everyone gets this idea of seeing a ghost. Well,
Right.
You can hear them. Sometimes you hear a ghost. Sometimes you smell a ghost. Sometimes you hear, or you don't hear or see them, but you just feel their touch. And I also believe you can detect ghosts by a feeling, because I've heard over and over again in my work people saying that they feel as if someone's watching them or stalking
right.
them. So I tend to think that that's something. That when you feel that impression like you're being watched, that might be the presence of a ghost.
So which would you say is the most common way to actually sense a ghost? By seeing one? Or in apparitions, are they more common than like footsteps? Or?
Oddly enough, footsteps, you mentioned, are the most common. Sounds are more common than sightings.
Right.
Usually, when you hear a ghost, you don't see a ghost. They only usually affect one of the senses. If you smell them, you don't see them or hear them. If you feel their touch, you don't actually see them. So it's like they can do one at a time. Or if you do see a ghost, odds are, most of the time, not always, but most of the time, you won't hear them.
Wow. I talked to one lady. She had a ghostly experience that involved nothing but piano music. She'd go running into the room downstairs where this piano wasn't. I mean, there was no piano, and the music would suddenly stop each time she walked in.
That happens a lot. Music, conversations, you'll hear people talking, and there'll be no one there. I did have one haunted piano story where the people heard the piano playing itself. We later discovered there was a cat inside the piano, and he was manipulating the strings quite accidentally, causing the ghost sound. But you have to look into this and be skeptical. You can't just believe everything's a ghost. You just can't say, oh, I've seen ghosts everywhere. That's a trap. You can't go down that path. You have
I have a friend, he won't believe in ghosts because of what he calls the cockroach theory. He says a cockroach is not going to, you never hear about ghosts of bugs. And I'm like, well, you've already explained that that's not true, right? I mean, there could be ghosts of anything.
A ghost could be anything. I've never heard of any cockroach ghosts either, even though I've stepped on a number of them. But I've seen animals or heard of cats, dogs, horses. In fact, I saw a ghost horse once. There's a lot of rationale to believe in ghosts. In fact, one of the great skeptics, a person who did a great deal to curtail psychic research, was Carl Sagan, who believed fervently that there was life in outer space. For the billions and billions of worlds he used to talk about, you know. But his basis for belief was a statistical one. There's far more evidence that ghosts exist than there is to anything to extraterrestrial life. Yeah. So I believe if you look at the literature, thousands of years of collecting stories, not just in Western Europe or one nation in Europe, but all over the world. Every culture has ghosts, ancient and modern. All kinds of people see ghosts, uneducated people, modern people, older people from long ago, presidents, kings. It cuts across the board.
And yet it's still a mystery.
It's still a mystery. We have not a clue what the stuff is. All we do know is that people encounter things which aren't there. And these encounters are very fleeting. They usually don't last very long. And they're very random. Sometimes they seem to have a pattern. Well, as I say, they're a loved one. A message is given to you or something of that nature. So we're left with this enigma of what is the ghost, why are they here, and what do they tell us about the nature of reality? I believe when we get to the bottom of this stuff, it's going to give us clues to time. You know, what is time? What is the nature of our universe altogether? I think if you look at, like, new physics, there's nothing in the new physical makeup, the new physics, that denies the existence of ghosts. They could very much exist. And we've gotten rid of Sir Isaac Newton and his clockwork universe.
Right.
We now know that there's a whole lot more out there than just the gears and whistles he envisioned. And our minds, our perceptions, are very much part of what reality is. So
yeah.
I believe
I agree.
That the world has much more to learn. And ghosts are just one symptom of what all the stuff is. I still don't have all the answers, but I'm out there seeking.
Well, have you been able to gather any, like, really good photographs or, you know, physical evidence?
Yes, I have, but quite by accident. I've taken thousands of pictures, never got a blessed thing. I got one picture, which really, in fact, I featured in an article in Fate magazine. It was so astounding. I was at the historical Levis Adobe, and I was there with a psychic, and I was just following her around, you know, taking a video, essentially, of what she came up with. She came up with nothing. She was all hype and nothing that I could prove. There was, you know, a lot of impressions and things like that. And I walked away from the entire experience kind of disgusted. And then someone said, "Oh, did you look at your video?" I said, "Yeah, you can look at it." I glanced at it a dozen times. Said, "Did you see the ghost?" I go, "What? There's no ghost there." So I went back over, and one shot, well, actually it was three shots, there's a face looking in the window. And it's on the outside looking in, which is on the second floor, which is kind of amazing. And then when I blew the face up, it was a picture of one of the people who lived in the house.
Oh,
but
wow.
The picture, though it was recognizable, was unlike any known picture. And I know all the photographs of all the people who ever lived there, so it wasn't something you could Photoshop. And it wasn't me, because I took the pictures. If I hadn't taken it, I could have said, "Well, somebody's just playing with my head." But I know I didn't do it. And it was quite remarkable. It looks very much like a face. It's got hair, eyes, a beard, very realistic. And it wasn't an orb or a fog or a band of light or a bar or anything like that. It looked like someone's face with a very pale color to their skin.
Huh. Wow.
So I have gotten a few pictures, not as many as I would really like, but the day is long past where a photograph will be proof that ghosts exist.
You're right.
Even if you got a picture of Abraham Lincoln, you know, skeptics would say, "Oh, well, you just faked that." Right? And they would.
Right.
And there's nothing you could say about it, because with computers now, you can fake anything. Even a novice could put together something that would baffle an expert.
Well, what's
so,
it going to take, do you think, to convince
people? The day when a photograph or even a recording would do it is gone. Even the day that when you could get a videotape. I mean, if you could get a videotape of Lincoln saying the Gettysburg Address, they'd just shoot it down and say, "Oh, well, you know, that's a fake. You faked it. That's very good.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you know, Spielberg made dinosaurs come to life, right? So why not Lincoln?" It can be done. I think the best thing we have is the transference of information. In other words, ghost comes back and tells you something that you could not know, that nobody could know. And then all of a sudden, new information is discovered or excavated or something that would indicate that what the ghost said was true.
Right.
I think
if enough people have ghost encounters eventually, I mean, people are going to turn around.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what the numbers are on skeptics. I imagine it's pretty close to like UFOs. 50-50 is what the UFO is, believers and skeptics.
Well, it's kind of interesting comparing the two studies, because they have a lot in common. UFOs and ghosts. Well, for one thing, for instance, I find in very haunted places high concentrations of electromagnetic energy. And these aren't just places with lots of electricity. These can be outside. These can be in historic buildings with no electricity, yet they rate these high readings. I've also read that in places where UFOs have landed, and they find like rings in the ground,
right,
they have high EM readings. So there's a similarity of events going on, but what they are, I don't know. Some believe it might have something to do with time, that fourth dimension, that UFOs may be able to manipulate time to traverse the universe. Obviously, they can't, the distances are too great unless you could somehow warp time. And so maybe these opening and closing these portals through time is something like what ghosts do. Well, like that monk I saw. Here's a monk walking through a courtyard. Middle of the courtyard, he disappears. The question I have, where did he go? He didn't disappear. He's somewhere. I can't see him, but he's still somewhere. I think he skipped through time. So here I am on Tuesday night, and then he gets to the middle of the courtyard. He jumped into next Friday.
Right.
I can't go with him because I'm here. I'm alive. And so consequently, he vanishes to me, but he's still walking through the courtyard. In fact, to him, I vanish. So he could see me in the courtyard, but then when he made that jump, maybe consciously or unconsciously, more than likely unconsciously, I would seem to disappear. So I think that may have something to do with it. Now, one thing I will find, men especially love UFOs. There's something kind of hard, scientific, kind of science fiction-y about them.
Right.
Women love ghosts. So there's a distinction between these two camps. The men will really get into the UFOs, but then turn off on the ghost. Women will really get into ghosts, but turn off on UFOs.
And since, you know, in my own study, I did a statistical analysis of all the people I interviewed who, you know, had reported ghost activity. I found twice as many women as men reporting ghosts. So I totally agree with what you're saying.
It may be that the women have more of an affinity towards seeing them. And but then I've talked to many skeptics who, when they have an encounter, they change their minds. And I've talked to other skeptics who, even though they see ghosts, and they've had bizarre things happen, they still won't accept it. Even with seeing something with their own eyes, they can't believe it. They'll make up some excuse like, it was a hallucination, or there must have been a reflection off this mirror on that wall over there. In fact, this one guy's answer to what he saw was so complicated, I said to him, wouldn't it be simpler to believe it was a ghost than try this convoluted theory to try to explain it away?
Right. Well, no, I have sympathy on me because that happened to me. That my first ghost sighting was actually 2 weeks or so after my mother died, and I saw her at our service, and I assumed I was hallucinating. I really did.
You know how many people have reported that?
She was in full color right in front of me, too. And,
yeah.
So I don't know, but that's what that means.
You're left with a dilemma. You can imagine, A, you just hallucinated it. You were just thinking about her, and your emotions were so powerful because of your loss that you simply imagined it. You can believe that, and it might even be true. I prefer to believe that she came back because she loved you and she loved her family so much. And I would back that up by all of the thousands of people, well, I'd probably say millions of people, who've had similar encounters over the years. I tend to believe that the evidence of ghosts gives us proof that this isn't the end.
Right.
This
I think
world,
it's some of the best evidence we have of life after death.
Right. And people have had encounters, and they've learned things from these ghostly encounters. They're not all fiction. They're not all crazy people. They're not drunks or addicts or something like that. There's a real event going on here. And whatever it is, we don't have all the answers. I'm going to try to find some of them. Maybe I won't get them all, but I hope to do so before I become a ghost myself.
Right.
And then when I do, I plan to continue my research from the other side. And then I plan to come back and haunt a number of people. The great Randy will be first on my list. Boy, he's going to get a surprise or two.
Yeah, I do definitely. So, let me see. We've covered hotels,
theaters,
and what about like cemeteries and roads? Are there haunted roadways as well?
Oh yeah, there's lots of haunted roadways and cemeteries too. I tend to think that places that know great emotion tend to be haunted. And that also would include battlefields.
All
so
right.
Especially many of the battlefields of the American Civil War, where so many people died horribly under horrific conditions, are still haunting there. People, I get some of my best stories from Civil War reenactors. Also areas, roadways where terrible events have happened, be they accidents or murders. A friend of mine lives in Louisiana near Shreveport, or Shreveport, or whatever it is.
I think that's close enough.
There's a haunted road, and it's called Juju's Ghost. After the Civil War, the slaves were freed in Louisiana, and there was this one black man whose name was Juju, and he was walking down the road, and he winked at a white woman, and that got rumor spread, and to the point where people started to say that he had attacked her. Of course, all he did was wink at her, and but he was a black man and she was white, and so a group of people got together and they got him out of his hut and took him out to the roadway where the event happened and strung him up, hung him. And now his ghost haunts that particular road because of the injustice of what happened.
Wow, it's terrible. Well, Richard, we're at our last 30 seconds here, or minute. So what would you like to leave our listeners with?
If people have questions about ghosts or the paranormal, they can always contact me on my website. And just pump my name in, Senate, Richard Sennett. And I'm all over the net. Just pop into my main site, and I'll try my best to answer it. I don't think we have anything to fear from most ghosts. I would much rather have a ghost in my house than a burglar. I think real people are far more dangerous than dead ones. But there are some. You have to be careful, because there's a lot out there we still don't know. This is the unknown. And if anyone ever tells you they have all the answers, think again. We're still trying to find answers to this, what I call the greatest of all riddles.
Right. I agree. Wow. Well, it's been great talking with you, Richard. I want to thank you again for coming on the show.
Well, glad to be here.
All right. Well, that's our show tonight. Our guest has been Richard Sennett. We've been talking about his ghost research. If you want to contact him, his website is ghost-stalker.com, www.ghost-stalker.com. And I hope you can join us next week when our guest is Timothy Wiley, and we're going to be talking about the dolphin UFO connection, which is something you don't hear much about. So I hope you can join us, and until then, have a wonderful evening.